Abe L. Wolk. Then Dr. Daugherty, he was head of the Allegheny Conference, which had just come into being, called me up and said that was a wonderful idea and that he would like to go out and see the building, that maybe he could do something. So we went out there, and he brought along Bailey Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, a professor of sculpture, and Wallace Richards, who was Mellon's second in command. I don't know how he got out there. Maybe Dr. Daugherty asked him to come. Dr. Daugherty was saying all the things he would want to do to it. Wallace Richards said, "You don't have to do anything. I'll take care of it." Quote. Now, when it had come before City Council, Eddie Leonard got up and said, quote, "All you want to do is to relieve them of taxes." Quote. I said they could give it to me and they'd be relieved of taxes. And he said that only the rich people do painting and art. I said that some of the greatest paintings in the world have been painted by men who didn't have a crust of bread to eat. Anyhow, Mrs. Marshall heard the story and revoked her offer. So I had to rush over to K.F. Rafferty. His son was married to Mrs. Marshall's daughter, and beg him to get in touch with her that I had 6 votes in council and Mayor Scully's approval, and that we would accept it with the greatest appreciation. I said that in a democracy you can't get a unanimous decision. So he got in touch with her, and she renewed her offer again, and that's how we got the Arts and Crafts Center. Wallace Richards didn't do anything for it, but he did do one thing. He got us the SCAFE home. I think the most important thing for the future is what I read to you in the beginning on preventive medicine. It's a shame we now have a graduate school of public health and we ought to have a program in preventive medicine. You talk about air pollution and sure, I'm for it 100%, and water pollution control, sure. They are absolutely necessary and of prime importance, but for prevention of disease, we're doing almost nothing aside from the pollution problems. And public transportation is the ultimate thing, not only to get people quicker from place to place, but to stop the emission of pollutants from the automobile, which we didn't have when I had smoke control. But even way back then, maybe 40 years ago, I had suggested that there be a ban on autos in the Golden Triangle and that people should use massive parking lots to be built on the perimeter with bus transportation from there to downtown. Important as public transportation is, it is still only a part of the most vital need of the future, providing an environment where preventive medicine will give human beings an opportunity to lead a healthy, happy life. Now that is the end of the interview that was given for the University of Pittsburgh Renaissance History. This is February 26th, and we are having our another session with Judge Wolk. This is going to pertain primarily to his more personal background.
7 children in our family.
Start again, would you, eh?
There were 7 children in our family. Rose Levine is the oldest. She's still living. She's 94. Flora is next, but she died, Flora Altman. Then I came, and after me, Jerome Wolk, but he died at the age of 85. Then Sarah, died at the age of 77. I think Bessie died at the age of 66. Mayor is a baby. He's still living. And he's 79. He's still living. 79. My brother Jerry was in the fur business. And after his death, his son, Jerome Jr., owns a business, and Mayor helps out down there. There were 7 children.
Where did you live?
You got in here from 1902 to 1905. You have that already.
Right.
when my father lost his money in the stock market, he came back to Pittsburgh and got that. I was born, I'm not sure whether it was on Wiley Avenue, back of the Carlton House, or on Fernando Street, which was Federal Street then.
Were all of the children born while you were living in that neighborhood? Most of them.
I think we were all, except Mayor. Mayor was born in New York, the baby, when we were in New York. The rest of us were born, I don't know, Bessie may have been born on Dinwiddie Street. I'm not sure.
Then you all went to school right there in that neighborhood.
When we came back, I went to South School, elementary school at downtown, because we lived on Vicaroy Street, and then I went to Central High School.
Where did you all go to for your religious school, or where did you go to?
Yes, well, in
Temple.
When we moved to East End, we went to B'nai Israel Synagogue, all of us. But in New York, I went to a synagogue I was bar mitzvahed. In the synagogue in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I was bar mitzvahed in New York.
Were your other brothers bar mitzvahed too?
Yes, they were bar mitzvahed in, I guess Mayor was bar mitzvahed in B'nai Israel. No, B'nai, he was Hebrew Institute. Frederick Segura downtown.
Would you repeat that? Jerome?
Jerome was from Mitzvah when we lived on Vicaroy Street. He was from Mitzvah in Beth and Medra Segura on Washington Street.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor was from Mitzvah, the youngest one.
Abe, all we were pointing out was that you came from a traditional Jewish home.
Yes. Oh, yes, we were Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
We were Orthodox, although we went to conservative congregations.
Yes.
We were Orthodox, though, and my mother was, who was born in New York, was very, very religious. From an Orthodox point of view, she kept separate dishes, and she Passover she had separate dishes and so forth.
And your own household, you and Charlotte, your own household was always a traditional Jewish home, not in the Orthodox sense, but you always followed all of the Jewish customs other than that.
You mean when I got married?
Mm-hmm.
When I got married, first I belonged to B'nai Israel Synagogue, which I was one of the most active one, and I was chairman of the Ways and Means Committee to raise the money.
Was B'nai Israel on Negley Avenue?
On Negley Avenue, and my father when I was in the service in the First World War, my father was president of B'nai Israel Synagogue.
Mm-hmm. When did you become interested in B'nai B'rith?
Before I went in the service, I became a member of the B'nai B'rith in 1916. In 1930 and 1931, I was president of the district of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and West Virginia. I was president. And I was very, very interested in youth. And the ADA, which was the young boys of 16 to 21, was formed by Sam Bieber in Iowa, but I brought it to the east of the Mississippi River in forming one in
Canonsburg.
One in Pittsburgh, and one in Aliquippa, and one in Braddock. And I was always interested in young men, and some of them became very, very prominent in later life. One is a doctor, Joe Feingold. He's a doctor for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He was one of my boys in the Pittsburgh chapter. My wife was Charlotte Crow. They lived in McKeesport. Her father was president of the temple in McKeesport. And we were married in May 27th, 1928. And I belonged to B'nai Israel Synagogue at that time. But for the high holidays, on account of her father being president of the McKeesport Temple, we attended services in McKeesport.
Now, where did you and Charlotte live when you married?
We first lived, I don't know what the, see, my memory's.
Well, in Pittsburgh, in Squirrel Hill or in Oakland?
Well, first we met in that, down on near Craig Street on Fifth Avenue. What's the name of that place, that big park?
Webster Hall was down there.
No.
Oh, you mean the Fairfax? Well, it was in Oakland.
In Oakland.
And then when
Then we moved to the Marfield Apartments.
Yes, and then when
and
your
then
family...
Then finally we took our own, rented a, on Beechwood Boulevard, in a duplex, and we moved from one duplex to another duplex on Beechwood Boulevard, and then in 1941 we bought our home on Bell Rock Street.
How many children did you have?
I had two children. As a matter of fact, my son was born in 1935, but my wife Rachel, because named after my mother, But her sister, Charlotte's sister, called her Shelley when she was just a baby. Just about almost. Shelley was born in the Montefiore Hospital, and the day after she was born, I was a councilman then. I think it was the Pittsburgh Press wanted to take a picture, and they took a picture of Charlotte with Shelley and me in the Montefiore Hospital a day after she was born, and it appeared in the newspaper.
And Shelley was what, a couple of years younger than Elliot?
Shelley was born in 1941.
Oh. Now, the children grew up then in Squirrel Hill.
Yes, at Bell Rock Street. And Elliot went to Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Then he was in the service. He had to go on the service. And then after he was in the service, he went to Harvard, graduated from Harvard Business School. And then he became, the most peculiar thing about Elliot was in Massachusetts Institute of Technology, You had to write, when your senior year, you had to write a thesis, just like if you were getting a PhD. And when I read it, it was on the stock market. I said, Elliot, you didn't take any course on the stock market at MIT. He says, I was interested in it. I think he took it from my father, because my father was only in the stock market. He lost his money, but he was a very smart man, and I think by 1929 he may have been worth $500,000. So Elliot probably inherited. And now Elliot is with Bear Stearns and Company. He's a partner. And he's made a lot of money. Now Shelley...
Where did she go to school?
Shelley first went... They both went to Taylor Allardyce High School. Then... Shelley went to Michigan, and she came home on the end of the first half year on vacation, and she says, Dad, it's too cold up there. I can't stand it. I said, it's so colder than it is in Pittsburgh. I says, how about going to a college in Virginia? They have a girls section in that University of Virginia. She says, no, it'll still be too cold. I says, I guess you want to go to Miami. She says, yes, I'd like to go to Miami. So Charlotte called up immediately, and they said if she's good enough for Michigan, she's good enough for us. So tell her to come down Monday. This was Thursday she talked to him. And Shelley was a very, very fine violin player, very fine. Elliot played the piano, but only popped the music. But Shelley was a excellent. She was in the orchestra at high school. She was in the orchestra at Michigan. But Charlotte went up to get her clothes with Shelley on Saturday morning before she went Monday to Florida. And her violin was in a close in the section where she couldn't get to. And as a result, my niece, who went to Michigan too, brought her home later. But Shelley didn't have to play the violin anymore. Now she's taking lessons on it. Now she lives in Eureka. She first was married to a roommate of Eliot's at Harvard Business School, and then she was divorced. And she married Solon Weinhold, who was therapeutic. He was an expert in therapeutics. And Shelley and Charlotte was out. They were living with her first husband in Los Angeles, and Charlotte was out there. And I was a judge then. I was supposed to come out for a couple of weeks, but there was a strike on the airplanes, and I couldn't go. And Charlotte stayed in Los Angeles for 11 weeks. And during that time, she went to UCLA and studied painting. And particularly Japanese painting.
Some of her works are here, yes.
And finally, she did come home, and in
She divorced her first husband.
And she got her master's degree at UCLA
in therapeutics?
Therapeutics, yes.
What, occupational therapy or?
She's
doing today.
Then they moved to Eureka after she married this Weinhold. When she married him, they moved to Eureka,
California,
300 miles north of San Francisco. And because he became a part of a clinic up there, and Shelley also works. She makes...
Yes, but Abe, she's not in occupational therapy, is she? Isn't she in clinical psychology? She has her master's degree in clinical psychology from UCLA.
Yes, UCLA.
Now, both of your children have children. How many grandchildren do you have?
Elliot, who lives in Scarsdale, New York, and is with this investment banking and brokerage firm, has three children, and Shelley has had two with her first husband.
And do they follow in the Jewish faith? They follow in the Jewish faith?
Yes, oh yes. Yes, they all follow in the Jewish faith, yes. only difference is Eliot belongs to the Reformed Temple in Scarsdale, and I don't know what the, I think it's a synagogue up in Eureka, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, her son was bar mitzvahed in Eureka. Her son was bar mitzvahed. But the most peculiar thing, Eliot, my son, I had to force him to go to Hebrew Institute, study Hebrew, in preparation to be bar mitzvahed. I belonged at that time to Beth Sholom's synagogue. And because they wanted to have two people, young men, bar mitzvahed, I didn't want that, and Eliot was bar mitzvahed at the Hebrew Institute. But in a way, I really forced him. But Eliot didn't force his two sons, but so his oldest son was never bar mitzvahed. But the most peculiar thing, Anthony, the second son, on his own, he objected to his mother having a Christmas tree. And he didn't want a Christmas tree. For some unknown reason, he was very Jewish, and he wanted to be bar mitzvahed. And he was bar mitzvahed. And he did a wonderful job. And we, Elias.
Wait, start that again, would you, Abe? Andrew.
The oldest son of, he graduates
of Eliot
high school this year, and he's going to college in September. Shelley's young boy, Stephen. I don't know how old he is now. He's about.
He must be close to that age. Were all of them here for your 90th birthday last fall?
For my 90th birthday, every one of them. We always bring them all together once a year. They come at different
here
times.
Here in Sarasota.
But Thanksgiving, they would always come together. But this year, they came on my 90th birthday. They came in August. I take four rooms over at the Sheraton Hotel. And there's nine of them, you know, so we need a lot of room. And everybody, even people in the building here who weren't there but heard about it, said it was the finest party they ever heard about. And of course, the people that were there said there's nothing like it. And
including,
by chance, all the grandchildren had something to say. That was the most interesting thing. And I think Eliot taped it, I'm not sure. I think he taped it, yes. They sang. My daughter, Shelley, wrote a different lyrics for my song.
Yes, the one that we have.
And she had the music there.
You mean from your song that you wrote for the Second World War?
So everybody says, why don't I sing it? So I sang the song at the party, and I performed other things, like I sang a song, I was always in musicals at college, you know. I sang a song and danced, and
would you tell us how you wrote this song?
Yes. In 1943, I read a column written by a New York columnist who said there is no song written like Over There in the First World War by George M. Cohan, because the war is only there, but this war is all over the world. So I studied the violin, and I played the piano by ear, you know, popular music. So I said, I'm going to write a song. And I wrote this song, we're here, we're there, we're everywhere. And you got a copy of this song.
And you said that you wrote the words, but that Maurice Boutelny wrote the music?
No, he made the arrangement. I couldn't write this out.
But he did the arranging of the music. Or did he
write? The words and music were made by me.
I see.
But Maurice Boutelny,
he put it together.
He helped on the verse and arranged the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. You and Charlotte were always involved in the community in various aspects.